30. Jimmy asked, "Was that the Earth Elemental?" Philip said, "I'm not sure." Whatever it had fallen out of the night with almost no warning, along with what appeared to be a large heap of wood and metal. The wood and metal landed frighteningly close to where they'd been sleeping. The other thing landed on the edge of the lava flow and exploded into a cloud of dust. There was a dark spot where it had landed, and for a moment that spot was vaguely man-shaped, but half of it was on the surface of the slowly flowing lava, and the man-shape grew disconnected and deformed. The dust floated, suspended in the air, then began to move, propelled as if by a strong breeze toward the dark spot drifting away in the river of rock. The dust coalesced into a cloud, which compressed into a form and hardened into the Earth Elemental, which immediately sank to the waist and began melting into the lava. The elemental faced the wizards and moved its arms as if it were walking toward them, but with each passing instant, more of it was consumed into the flow. It would have been tempting to think the creature was merely partially submerged, but the dark brown slick that was spreading out from where its body met the surface of the flow told a different story. The slick grew redder and brighter the farther away from the creature it got, until finally it was just so much more molten rock. The elemental's head was the only part still visible by the time it was pulled around a bend and out of the wizard's view.
"Yep," Tyler said. "That was the Earth Elemental."
"To think, it reformed and chased us all this way," Jimmy said.
"Yeah, it seems crazy," Philip said. "But that's the only logical explanation."
"Doesn't explain this, though,"
Tyler said, turning his attention to the mangled pile of scrap lumber that had accompanied the elemental back into their lives. After a brief examination, Philip said,
"Looks like it was a cart, maybe?"
Tyler said,
"The cart must have gotten hung up on the elemental at some point between here and where we left it."
"No," Jimmy said, "no. If there'd been a cart between here and the bog where we fought Pigpen, we'd have seen it."
"Yeah," Gary said. "The last cart like that we saw was in Bowmore."
Tyler said,
"Yeah. Wait, what?"
Tyler closed his eyes and sighed.
"Oh, man, he's right. There was a cart in Bowmore. It was the first thing we passed on the way into town."
Philip and Jimmy both closed their eyes, trying hard to remember, and regretting it deeply when they did.
"Why didn't any of us remember that until now?"
Philip asked.
"Never mind that," Jimmy said, looking at Gary. "Why didn't you mention it back when we were looking for a way to carry the blade? You clearly remembered the cart just fine."
"Well, I thought about it," Gary said, "but I realized we couldn't use it."
"Why not?"
Gary shook his head as if the answer were obvious.
"It was an ox cart. Jimmy, do you have an ox?"
The other three men groaned in unison, like a barbershop quartet whose tenor just called in sick. Tyler said,
"Gary, just because it's meant to be pulled by an ox doesn't mean we need an ox. We could have put the blade in it and pushed it ourselves."
Gary looked at the others, wheels turning in his head. A look of comprehension flickered across his face.
"Wow,"
he gasped.
"Yeah," Tyler said.
Gary whispered,
"I didn't realize."
Tyler nodded.
"See it now, do you?"
"Yes,"
Gary said.
"You guys really think I'm an idiot, don't you? Of course I considered putting the blade in the back and pushing it. That was the first thing that crossed my mind. Then I thought about it for 5 seconds, and I saw what a bad idea it was."
Tyler said,
"I don't know about that."
"Then let me explain. First off, that cart weighed a ton. It was meant for horses or oxes or something to pull, not four out-of-shape guys. It wouldn't have been like pushing a stalled Toyota in a parking lot. We're talking about wooden wheels on rocky terrain. Second, did you look at the path we were going to be traveling? From where we stood at the time, it looked like it was going to be mostly downhill, so we couldn't pull from the front or push it from behind. We'd have had to pull on it from behind to keep it from going out of control, and that would have been really hard.
Well, maybe we could have ridden it down the hill,
Philip offered in a quiet voice. Gary shook his head.
That's just dumb. We'd have crashed and broken our necks, even if we didn't have the magic cuts through everything blade in the cart with us. Hell, I wouldn't be surprised if Todd left it there for us as a trap, hoping we'd pull a Calvin and Hobbes and kill ourselves.
Jimmy said,
We could have rigged up some brakes or something.
Gary rolled his eyes.
It had a kind of parking brake thing, but it wouldn't have stopped the cart if it had any speed. We'd have had to improve the brakes, and none of us have the know-how to do that sort of thing. No. I see now that I should have mentioned it to you guys, but it wouldn't have changed anything. Now, are we going to stand here questioning every decision I've ever made? Or, since we're all awake now, shall we get on with it?
5 minutes later, they were on the move. As with every other part of the quest, the terrain forced them to go a certain direction. In this case, the spot where they'd slept was surrounded on one side by a sheer cliff, and on two sides by an impassable expanse of hot orange lava. Emitting smoke so thick you couldn't see halfway across the flow, let alone the far bank, the only options were to either climb back up the cliff wall or follow the land along the lava flow's bank for as long as it lasted. It didn't last long. They walked upriver for less than 10 minutes before they rounded a bend. Shortly before the bank disappeared, it was connected to one of the rocky islands in the middle of the flow by a thin, precarious bridge, as if the lava had eroded straight through a large boulder, leaving two islands and a thin tendril of rock between them. Beyond that island, there were many more islands, piles of dangerous, sharp rocks surrounded by dangerous, molten rock. The islands were just different enough from one another to seem essentially interchangeable. Each island was connected to at least one other by a rocky bridge, but many of the islands seemed to be dead ends. They were sure that this was the only way forward, but toward what? They stood and gaped for a moment. Jimmy said,
What could create something like this?
Tyler shook his head.
Some guy wants to make a maze?
Philip crossed the first bridge. It narrowed to only a foot wide in the middle, which would seem easy enough to balance on when you're walking on the ground, but suspended over a moving stream of foul-smelling, fiery death, it might as well have been a tightrope. Tyler, Gary, and Jimmy took turns, two of them carrying the blade across the lava. Like spreading your arms, carrying the blade actually made balancing easier, if more terrifying. Philip's right arm was still in a sling. He had to trust his inner ear to keep him out of the lava. After 2 hours of balancing on narrow bridges while breathing in mystery fumes and roasting from beneath, they reached the far side of the flow. Resting against the black canyon wall, looking back the way they'd came, they couldn't see the far side where they'd started. They had intended to stop and take a breather, but the air quality did not encourage breathing. They had all wrapped whatever fabric they could spare around their noses and mouths, and their inhalation had created black soot stains over their mouths and nostrils. Philip hated the idea that if not for the torn bit of t-shirt fabric stretched over his face, all of that would be in his lungs. He tried not to think about all the stuff that had made it through the t-shirt. They followed solid land for as far as they could, and soon found themselves at the source of the lava. The canyon walls towered over their heads, extended out in front of them, and met at a single point. Beneath that point, a crease where the walls merged ran down to a fountain, spewing wild gouts of lava from beneath the surface of the earth. Viscous orange blobs of hot liquid minerals spurted from the orifice as if the planet's artery had been severed. The sustained roar was low and loud enough that they felt it in their rib cages. The lower part of the spray merged with the existing lava to form the source of the flow they'd been following. The upper portions of the plume hardened and cooled in midair, then rained down, landing with enough force to crack open on the rocks or make small splashes in the lava flow. Some trick of convection caused a steady wind to blow out, away from the fountain of rock, pushing all the fumes and particulate debris away from this part of the canyon to collect in a thick cloud downstream, the very cloud they had just walked through. The flow started fairly high on the canyon wall, then split and flowed around a large, almost perfectly circular expanse of flat, bare rock, large enough to serve as parking space for several buses. The lava flow rejoined itself and continued down the canyon from that point, and there were several more of the rocky islands connected by bridges that all seemed to lead to the large, round island. Also, because of some quirk in the way sunlight filtered down past the surrounding walls and pierced into the shade at the bottom of the chasm, there was a sort of natural spotlight shining in the center of the flat, rocky expanse.
"I may be reading too much into this," Philip said, "but I think Todd wants us to go over there."
"Yes," Jimmy said. "That's what Todd wants."
Jimmy nodded to Philip, then to Tyler and Gary. The closest thing they had to a plan was the simple rule, don't do what Todd wants. But up until this point, they'd had little choice. They had to complete the quest because it was their only hope of getting out alive. Now the quest was all but complete, and they all suspected that Todd would try to kill them anyway. This was their chance. As soon as they saw any opportunity to mess up Todd's plan, they would spring into action, unless that was what Todd told them to do. They stood and scanned the area, examining their goal, the path forward, the ground on which they stood, the canyon walls, and the sky above. Finally, Jimmy sighed and said,
"I think we have to go over there. I don't see a choice."
They navigated across the islands and the narrow bridges to the broad, flat stage. The smoldering fumes seemed to darken and intensify, making the single spot of light stand out even more. They stood along the edge of the stone disk for a long time, looking for the trap they knew was there somewhere. Jimmy held up a single finger, telling the others to wait a moment before they proceeded, which seemed odd to Philip, as none of them had indicated any intention of doing anything. Jimmy let go of the blade, leaving it in the hands of Tyler and Gary, and took one large step forward. Nothing happened. Jimmy took another step, with no result. Jimmy lifted his leg to take another step, and suddenly the air was filled with the same deafening voice that had ordered them to be silent when the quest began.
"You have done well," the voice said, "and now you shall be rewarded. Bring the Möbius blade into the light, and the identity of the Chosen One will be revealed."
Jimmy strolled up to the edge of the spotlight, but did not step into it. Instead, he turned to the others and motioned them forward. There was no need to say that anyone smelled a trap. They were all quite used to the idea that they lived in a trap. This was just the trigger that would spring the trap. The others all moved forward, but stopped well short of the spotlight's edge. Philip said,
"He wants us to bring the Möbius blade into the light."
Jimmy looked at Philip, who mimed the act of tossing something heavy as best he could with one arm in a sling. Jimmy turned and looked to Tyler, who nodded. Gary smiled broadly enough for it to be obvious, despite the fabric stretched over his face, and started to pull the blade from Tyler, but Jimmy stopped him and took the blade himself. Jimmy handled the blade easily. It wasn't heavy, just appallingly dangerous. He told the others to stand back, but they stood directly behind him, so close that their feet were almost touching. Jimmy held the deadly metal hoop in front of him and mentally rehearsed his toss. He closed his eyes and breathed as deeply as he could without coughing. Jimmy opened his eyes, drew back, and gently lobbed the Möbius blade into the light. The blade coasted into the center of the spotlight, then landed flat on the stone surface with a harsh clang. The wizards crouched and huddled together, waiting for whatever would happen. Their heads swiveled and their eyes darted in every direction, looking for the inevitable attack. They searched frantically for their impending doom. Then they searched in a more confused manner. Slowly, they rose from their collective crouch. Philip said, "Huh." Then, the rocky surface beneath them shattered, and they all fell into the darkness beneath, leaving the Mobius blade alone and unattended in the center of the spotlight.